think.
Nice.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, let us begin. We, at the end of our last class, concluded the Mishnah that began on Yud Tet Amud Aleph 19a. I think that probably it would be worthwhile, since the Marao will take off from the Mishnah, that we briefly review the Mishnah on 19a, Yud Tet Amud Aleph. It's halfway down the page. Ha kover et meto shlosha yamin kodem laregel. He who buries is dead 3 days before the festival. Okay. Now just an administrative matter. I will be away the next 2 Wednesdays. I am going to the Rabbinical Assembly Convention and then to Israel. The Rabbinical Assembly Convention is in Mexico City. I'll be there. I'm going there on Sunday. And then in the middle of Wednesday, I'm going to Tel Aviv. So I'll be doing some traveling. So no class for 2 weeks. Okay. Mm. Okay.
Then we come up against Passover.
Not immediately. Passover is the middle of the month.
Yeah.
Okay. 19a. Hakover et meto shlosha yamim kodem laregel. He who buries his dead 3 days before the festival. But la imenu gzerat shiv'a. Shiva will cancel, I'm sorry, the festival will cancel Shiva. Shmona batlu emenu gzerat shloshim. 8 days before the festival, and the festival comes, so somebody dies. 8 days later comes the festival, the end of the eighth day, the end of the eighth day. And then the festival will cancel the Shiva. The Shloshim, sorry. And keep in mind that both the conclusions, both the statements of the Mishnah that I have just recited are not what we practice. They're not what we practice. We say here that 3 days, if you observe 3 days of Shiva and the Regel comes, then the Regel is Mafsik. It cancels the Shiva. What is the law?
Even part of a day
is like the whole day. So that's what the law is, but this is what the Mishnah says, which in fact is not what we do. The Mishnah says 3 days, and if then after 3 days, if then the regel comes, it cancels the rest of Shiva. And as far as the Shloshim goes, here the Mishnah says, Shmona, 8 days, 8 days. Our law is, do you know what our law is? 7 days, 7 days. And even 7 days, it's the seventh day that's not a full day. But here, at least the Mishnah is implying that you have to have observed a full 8 days. Then, if the festival comes, the festival will cancel. Okay? So far, that's what the Mishnah is saying. Mipnei sha'amru Shabbat olav eina mafseket. For the sages said, the Shabbat is included in the 7 days of Shiva and does not cancel them. Regalim mafsikim veinan olim. But the festival does come and cancel Veinan Olin, but the days don't count. They're not included in the count. Okay? Now, that's a little bit hard to understand. Mipnei Shamru, first of all, the Mipnei Shamru, the Hebrew is a little bit rough there. Mipnei Shamru usually doesn't mean that. It doesn't mean that for the sages said. I kind of think maybe the flow is, since the sages said, Mipnei she'amru, since because the sages said, Shabbat olah ve'enam afseket, that Shabbat is counted in a week where you have Shiva, Shabbat is counted ve'enam afseket, and it doesn't cut off the Shiva, regalim afsikim, because they have the one concept that Shabbat counts, on the other hand, regalim afsikim, the regal is different from Shabbat. The regal cancels. The regal cancels the Shiva, assuming that you've had 3 days, because that's what we already established according to the Mishnah. The einan olim, and the regal doesn't count. And the regal doesn't count. Okay? That's the way I would read it. It's a little bit different than the way the English presents it here. Now, remember the concept. Why does Shabbat not cancel Shiva?
It's always a Shabbat.
Because there's always a Shabbat. There's always a Shabbat. If Shabbat would cancel Shiva, then there would never be Shiva. There would never be a Shiva.
But you always have a holiday.
No, you don't always have a holiday. This week there was a holiday, but it doesn't even count. Purim. But next week...
That's what I wanted to ask. Does Purim count as a holiday?
No, Purim doesn't count as a holiday.
What does it count as?
Nothing. It counts as Purim, but has no effect on Shiva.
And Hanukkah?
And it's same thing. No effect on the Shiva. Because it's not a biblical holiday. By biblical, I mean it's not a holiday of the Torah. It's not a holiday commanded of the Torah. And
it's
since
not Shabbat.
Well, it's not commanded by the Torah.
They're national, okay. They're not religious.
They're not commanded by the Torah. Simple. Simple. Don't give me all these explanations.
Oh, my Lord.
Okay, it's not commanded by the Torah.
I have a question. If you're sitting Shiva, can you leave the house to hear the Megillah, or you have to have somebody read it at home?
That's a matter of machlokes. Some do one, some do the other. Okay? Generally, you try not to leave the house.
If you cancel Shiva, you also cancel Shloshim, right? Both.
Not so sure. Because we'll get to that. The Gemara will raise that question a little bit further on. Okay? So, the Regalim Mafsikim, so Shabbat cancels, Shabbat doesn't cancel, but the Regal does cancel. Shabbat counts, the Regal doesn't count. Okay? Now, the Mishnah goes on, says, Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Rabbi Eliezer says, Mi shecharav Beit HaMikdash atzeret keShabbat. Once the temple was destroyed, Shavuot is treated like a Shabbat. Once the temple is destroyed, Shavuot is treated like a Shabbat. Now, remember that hidden in that simple statement of Rabbi Eliezer were really a number of concepts. First of all, you have to keep in mind that when he's talking about Shavuot, which is called Atzeret, you know a holiday Atzeret, it's called Shmini Atzeret. This is not Shmini Atzeret. When the Gemara simply talks about something called Atzeret, Atzeret means a stop, an end. And Atzeret by itself is an end to Pesach. It's an end, it's a stop to Pesach. Okay? Because on Pesach you start counting on the second day, and you conclude that count, and right after that is Atzeret Shavuot. Shavuot in the land of Israel, and we're assuming that here Rabbi Eliezer is living in the land of Israel, Shavuot is how many days long? One day long. Shavuot is 1 day long. So, which of the holidays, in the broadest sense of the term, is Shavuot like?
Shabbat.
It's like Shabbat. Of course, there are also two other holidays that are sort of like that. One is Yom Kippur. Okay? The other one is Rosh Hashanah. But Rosh Hashanah, remember, and we explained this last week, Rosh Hashanah in the Torah is 1 day. Rosh Hashanah by the time of the Talmud is 2 days. Okay, so Rosh Hashanah is a little bit different. But surely now, Atzeret, he says, Mi shecharab bet ha-mikdash. Once the temple was destroyed, Atzeret would be treated the same as Shabbat. And therefore, it would count, but it wouldn't cancel. Just the way Shabbat. Shabbat counts, but it doesn't cancel. Shavuot would count, and it would not cancel. Now, hidden also in there is the reasoning, why would it be different before the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed? And that was because Shavuot conceptually, even if not in practice, was related to like a seven-day festival. Why? Because on a festival you were required to bring festal offerings. The festival requires you to go up to Jerusalem. Lo yera elefanai rekam. You cannot appear in the temple empty-handed. Instead, you bring a festal offering. Okay, you bring the offering. Eventually, you can eat that offering. So it's not as if you're giving it away. But that's all part of the celebration of the festival. Let's say you don't do that. You had an appointment in Jerusalem. You had to visit a cousin. And, you know, you visited your cousin and you thought there was plenty of time to go over to the temple. And lo and behold, the cousin's child came in from the Galilee. You hadn't seen them in years. You're going to suddenly walk out on your cousin? And then the next generation, your great, your, what do you call it? Your
cousin once removed.
Cousin once removed. Okay. It's not nice. And you say, oh, well, I'll go to the temple. I still got time. You have a good time, and it's really great going. And what happens? Boom, it's too late. Why? Because Shavuot is one day. One day is a very short period of time. You are in trouble because you have gone to Jerusalem and you are required to go to Jerusalem and you are required to bring your festal offering when you go to Jerusalem. And ingrate that you are, you got preoccupied. Oh, but we're not worried. We know that this is what happens. And therefore, according to the law, there were 7 days beginning with Shavuot, which were the days on which, if you didn't bring the offering when you were supposed to, you could still be late and it would count. And it would count. Tashlumin. There were Tashlumin for a whole period of 7 days. Okay? So we have actually Shavuot was dealt with conceptually as a week. As a week. Why? Because all the other festivals were a week. The other times you went up to Yerushalayim, you went for a week. Right, so that obviously the behavior was such, the expectations were such, the social relations were such, that this too was, even though the Torah makes it a day, still in terms of compensating for what you haven't done, you can make it a week. Okay? Once the temple is destroyed, you can't bring any sacrifices. You can go to Yerushalayim. You can't do the things you used to do. Then Shavuot is in fact no longer like those other festivals. In fact, it is one day period, and that's it. That's the whole thing. That's the whole thing. So that's why Rabbi Eliezer says, Mishacharab Beit HaMikdash. Once the temple was destroyed, things are different. And Shavuot, since it's now dealt with as one day and one day alone, is like Shabbos. That is to say, it counts and it doesn't cut off. Okay? Now, also implied in this is the general concept of why a regel is mafsik in the first place. Why is the regel mafsik? Why does the festival cut off? Why does it cut off? Well, the truth is there's a very good reason why the festival cuts off. We know that you cannot observe mourning on the festival. That's obvious to us. Because there's a general commandment to celebrate on the festival. It's true, surely, for all the people who might visit you. They can't do that. And that's an essential part of this whole experience. The truth is even that you can't do it. You on the festival are supposed to also rejoice to the extent that you can. People sometimes ask me this, so even in Shiva, it's interesting. People wonder whether they can go home and say Kiddush, because they know they sing Kiddush. The answer is yes, and you can also sing Shalom Aleichem and Yari Bon Olam. You can do the whole thing, because that's the nature of it. That's the nature of it. You have to observe the Sabbath. The Sabbath takes precedence. But that's why the Sabbath is a little weird. The Sabbath you might have thought would cut off. The only reason the Sabbath doesn't cut off is one reason. Because you can't have Shiva otherwise. Right? It was that reason we said at the very beginning. Otherwise, it makes good sense that the Shabbat should cut off. But Regel, the festival which doesn't come every week, and has all these laws associated with it, like the Sabbath, but even more, you can't observe those things on the Regel. Okay? You can't do that. So let's say you have 2 days before the regel comes. You had a loss, you made a burial 2 days before. 2 days before. Okay? Well, no, that's not now. Because we're talking the Mishnah terms. So 4 days before. Okay, 4 days before, 3 days have passed. Because remember, according to the Mishnah, 3 days have to pass. So 3 days pass. And then the next day is the regal. What will happen, practically speaking? Can you observe the Shiva during the regal? You can't observe it anyway. You can't observe it. And what's going to happen? When you get to the end of the regal, can you observe the rest of Shiva?
No.
Because if you kept counting, the whole thing would disappear anyway. So the reason why the regal is mafsik, the reason why the regal cuts off, is not because of anything we're trying to do to you. We're really not making any change at all. The regal normally will cut off. There's no way that it can't cut off. So the fact is that it's going to do that. The fact that it's going to do it, maybe we can actually get something positive out of that. Such as, for example, you could shave, take a haircut, before the regal actually begins. Maybe. Maybe there would be some things you could do. You could wash yourself up. You could do some things to prepare for the regal itself. Maybe. Okay? So, in this very simple statement of Rabbi Eliezer, all of this is implied. There's a whole logical reasoning behind this. The whole sense of why it is that the regal has an effect on the observance of Shiva to begin with. And therefore, he says, if Shavuot is just like a Shabbat, one day, it only comes once a year, not every week. Okay? We don't have to suffer the practical problem of it being 7 days and therefore, in effect, dissipating any morning anyway, the way we had to on the other festivals, because they were 7 days long. So we treat it just like Shabbat, he says. Okay. All right, next one. That's Rabbi Eliezer. Rabban Gamliel Omer. Rabban Gamliel says, Rosh Hashanah, the Yom HaKippurim, Kirigalim. Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippurim are treated like festivals. Okay? They're treated like festivals. Why? Because according to Rabban Gamliel, Shabbat also should be treated like a festival. Because you really can't mourn on these days. You really can't mourn on them. And Shabbat should be treated that way. Why is Shabbat not treated that way? One reason alone. Why? Because it comes every week. How often does Rosh Hashanah come? Once a year. So indeed, they are all the same, and we should normally have expected even Shabbat to cut off, but it doesn't cut off because it comes once a week. However, the other days, like Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippurim, They are treated like festivals. Okay?
How did he treat the Shavuot?
How did he treat Shavuot? I think the assumption is probably the same way. It was like a regal. Because for him, the determinative issue is the feeling of the Yom Tov, and once that comes, boom, it's all over.
It says in the note, see? What? Likewise, according to Rabban Gamliel, Shavuot, even after destruction of the temple, cancels Shavuot.
Yeah, is that right? Okay. It's logical. Okay. V'chachamim omrim, but the sages say, lo kedivrei zeh v'lo kedivrei zeh. They don't agree with Rabbi Eliezer, and they don't agree with Rabbi Gamliel either. Okay? Ella, rather, atzeret kiragalim, Shavuot is dealt with like a regel. Okay? The Yom HaKippurim, the Rosh Hashanah, the Yom HaKippurim, Kishabbat. And Yom HaKippurim and Rosh Hashanah are dealt with like Shabbat. Okay? They have a sort of compromise position. Compromise position. Now, of course, none of this is what we do. So it's all interesting because we're able to flesh out the ideas that really are behind so much of this as a result of these differences of opinion. It's interesting that Gemara never says, all right, now we're going to learn about the theory behind regals or the theory of mourning. Never would ever do that. Instead, Rabbi Eliezer says, Shavuot before the destruction of the temple is 7 days, and it's like a regal, and afterwards it's like a Shabbat. That's the way you explain psychology. Right? It's pre-Freudian, as it were. Any questions so far? Yes?
I take it for granted that once the second temple came up, the old custom came back.
Once the second... No, they're speaking after the destruction of the second temple. So what you could say is when the third temple will be built, okay, then we'll be back to where Rabbi Eliezer said that we were in the days before the second temple was destroyed.
Between the first and the second temple, it was like Shabbat.
Between the first temple and the second temple, yeah, but that was a relatively short period of time, 70 years. It's only 70 years between the two temples. Okay?
Death occurs 3 days before the long holiday, Passover. 3 days, and then it's canceled. The Shiva is canceled.
Correct, according to the Mishnah. Yeah. Not according to Jewish law.
Right, that's...
No. How long does it have to be? How long do you have to observe Shiva before the festival starts to have it canceled? According to the law, do you think?
7 days.
No. 1 hour.
1 hour.
1 hour, period. That's it.
Day.
Yep. I had a funeral, I remember one year, it was Erev Rosh Hashanah. That's the rabbi's nightmare. The last thing in the world you want is to have a funeral Erev Rosh Hashanah. So Erev Rosh Hashanah, the service is going to be whenever it's going to begin, and I'm on the cemetery. I figured I'm going to... Basically, maybe I should go into the grave. I'm going to get there soon anyway. You're a completely nervous wreck. And actually, what happened was exactly the opposite, which is what I learned a long time ago as I teach the young students today. When you're engaged in the performance of a mitzvah like burial, in effect, you forget about everything else. And you end up having the best holiday you've ever had. So I had anticipated that it was going to be, I was going to be a complete nervous wreck. But it was exactly the opposite. But just think of what this was. We were on the cemetery in the afternoon before Rosh Hashanah. Okay? Must have been 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Rosh Hashanah starts at 6. That Shiva was over 1 hour later. That was the whole thing. It was all over. So that's the way it is. Very interesting. Other questions?
I just When did it change between this Mishnah and
the Bible? Oh, we'll see. We'll see.
Second one is, when they say it's like Shabbat, Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, that means that you go to synagogue, you observe the holiday, and then you come back and continue to sit?
It would mean come back after it's over.
Right.
Yes, it would mean, correct. That's what they mean when they say Kishabbat, that's what they mean. Okay? But remember, that's not what we do. Okay? Very good. Now we go to the Gemara. Okay. Amarav. What does the English say? Mishnah taught that if a festival falls after Shloshim has begun, right, the remainder of Shloshim is canceled. Well, that's true. We read in the Mishnah that if you have 8 days, 8 days means how many days of Shloshim have you had? Well, special, right, you've had 1 day of Shloshim. In truth, you're counting eight. But when we say, we're really referring to the 1 day. That's what he's referring to. So that's what we've said. If you have eight, and then the festival comes, cancels everything else, cancels the whole rest of the Shloshim. Okay? All right, Amarav. Gzerat, it should say either Gzerot or Gzerat Shloshim Batlu, Yamim Lo Batlu. No, this is kind of odd. Rav says, the laws of the Shloshim are canceled, but the days are not canceled.
Yeah, because they need to go to the cemetery. Even though you don't see it, usually after 30 days you go to the cemetery in Israel.
That they didn't think of. That's not what they're going to think of. Okay? They're just, we don't know what it means so far. The laws, the restrictions of the Shloshim are canceled. Talking about 8 days. 8 days before you had a burial, so you passed 8 days. Comes the festival. The restrictions, Rav says, are canceled. But the days are not. The days are not. V'chein amar Rav Huna, and similarly Rav Huna said, Gzerat batlu, yamim lo batlu. He says the same thing. The restrictions are cancelled, the days are not cancelled. V'rav sheshet amar, afilu yamim nami batlu. Even the days also are cancelled. Now, I don't know how you react to this, but I find it difficult to understand. Now, what are they talking about? They say, to begin with here, we know that if 8 days pass, the regals comes, it cancels Shloshim. The question is, what do you mean by cancel Shloshim?
You don't observe the Shloshim.
So it means the restrictions of Shloshim, right?
Correct.
That's what Rav is saying. He says it cancels the restrictions, but it doesn't cancel the counting. So you're saying to yourself, so what are you counting for? You're counting because there are restrictions. And you want to count how many days you have restrictions. If you're not counting restrictions, why are you counting? Right? That's the problem here. That's the problem. Because it seems to be that two of them have this opinion to begin with. Then the third one, Rav Sheshet, comes and says, Sheshet says, Afilu yamim nami batlu, even the days are also canceled. Well, the days for what? I mean, the day. Not, we don't know what they're talking about. We don't know what they're talking about. Okay.
The other people are responding.
Now, this is what the Gemara is going to now try to have to figure out. Because this is so odd, the way this whole thing is put, it's a little hard for us to understand what they're talking about. So that's why the Gemara says, it's very unusual that the Gemara uses this kind of terminology. It says, my Tama. My Tama. Now, my Tama usually means what is the reason for something that we've just said. But here, it kind of means that. The English translation is not bad. In what sense? That's not bad. In what sense did Rav and Rav Huna state that the days themselves are not canceled? So in other words, my tama, what is the reason, what do you mean when you say the days are not canceled? The restrictions are canceled and the days are not canceled. What do you mean the days are not canceled? Okay? She'im lo gilach erev aregel. What this means is that in the case that he had not shaved, we use the term shaved here, but I don't think that's really what it means. It means cut his hair. In the case that he did not cut his hair, erev aregel, on the eve of the festival, asur legaleach achar aregel. It is prohibited to shave after the festival. After the festival. So what Rav and Rav Huna are saying is that the festival comes, and there's actually a reason here why we are concerned about the festival cutting off. Because it gives you an opportunity to do what everybody else remembers supposed to do. You're supposed to get ready for the festival. Right? And one of the ways you're supposed to get ready for the festival is to shave, to cut your hair. That's why you remember we said that you're not allowed to cut your hair on the festival. Why? That would force you to cut your hair before the festival. So obviously getting ready for the festival was crucial. And we wanted, the rabbis are trying to structure everything so that people, individuals as well as the community, would be put under both personal and social pressure to prepare appropriately for the festival. I remember when I was a kid, we used to have a thing, I lived among Catholics. I grew up among Catholics. And when all the kids had new shoes, we knew it was about to be Pesach. Why? Because it was Easter. It was Easter. All they, it's correct. They had white shoes for Easter. And we didn't have so many Jews living there, but all the Catholics were there, and the Catholics, they were very good about these things. And they would all have new shoes, and we knew, therefore, we didn't think of, we knew it was Easter, of course, but the other side of it was that Pesach was coming. Okay? So there is a sense, a social sense, in the community about personal observance and personal preparation that the community structures an awful lot of things to make you feel in advance that you should be getting ready for the festival. Okay? And that's what's happening here. So that we have seen from the very first Mishnah that we started this year with, that the Mishnah was concerned about seeing to it that you cut your hair before the festival. Here, too, this is one of the things that really interested the rabbis, according to Rav and who? Rav and Rav Huna. And Rav Huna. They really want you to cut your hair before the festival. What if a guy doesn't cut his hair before the festival? Right? The festival comes and is mafsik. It's mafsik. It cuts off the shloshim. We want you to take advantage of that. The whole reason we're stacking the cards this way is why? So you'll cut your hair. So you too will look good because, in fact, you passed your shiva. It's time to get ready for this. We're not talking, by the way, about someone who, for parents. This is for all the other relatives except parents because parents, remember, that's a much longer period of time. So this is, in that case, okay, the shloshim is cut off. We want you to cut your hair. What does this guy do? He doesn't cut his hair. Doesn't cut his hair. In that case, after the regal, you're going to count the rest of that shloshim, and you're going to be a mess. You're already a mess for the regal. That's what we were concerned about. You didn't take advantage of the way we structured this law? Well, you're going to suffer. You're going to have to count as though during the regal you're not going to do anything that you shouldn't be doing. Afterwards, we penalize you and you're not going to be able to cut your hair until that shloshim is actually over.
frankly, if you didn't care enough to do it in the right time, you probably aren't going to be so...
Well, maybe yes, maybe no. Maybe he was busy. And the community really wants to exert social pressure so that even if you are busy, you'll get your white shoes before Easter. Okay? You know, because you'll feel that sense that you just got to do it. You got to do it. It wants to push you in that direction. Okay? So that's the sense of Rav and Rav Huna. That's, according to the Gemara, what they're talking about. She'im lo gilach erev aregel. If he didn't cut his hair the eve of the regel, which was now his eighth day after the death had occurred, after the burial had occurred, asur legaleach achar haregel. It is prohibited for that person to cut his hair after the regel. Okay?
We get back to the complexity of the rationale of looking like you're mourning in terms of the way people respond to you,
mm-hmm.
and how this then plays out. So if you follow and prepare yourself for the festival, then in fact you lose that identification and you're forced back into, unless the community recognizes it anyway, which it may well happen. I don't know if it was small enough that it made no difference whether or not you looked that way because everybody knew you were still in Shloshim. But otherwise, I think that that is a difficult thing, mm-hmm. because I think the 30-day period is a very important mm-hmm. milestone.
Sure. That's right.
And so it's just interesting to hear the irony is that the penalty is that the person is achieving what they wanted to achieve anyway, assuming that the reason that they didn't prepare themselves was that they just didn't feel well enough to mm-hmm. actually abide by mm-hmm. the requirement to celebrate the festival.
You're right. It's all true. What we're trying to do is to get them to celebrate the festival.
Right.
We're trying to push the pressure, to increase the pressure to make sure that the community has a certain level of uniformity in terms of its proper celebration of the festival.
Even if it's cut short, my question then is, the community responds to you. If you wear the kriya, even though, you know, your shiva has been cut short, wouldn't people respond to you knowing that?
Yeah, that's why you shouldn't wear your kriya.
You should not wear your kriya.
Correct. It's correct. Your reasoning is perfect. The reasoning is correct. That's why you wouldn't wear the kriya either. It's correct.
You wouldn't want to wear it.
Correct.
No.
Correct.
Okay.
Now look at the Rashi manuscript. Rashi manuscript is in the very, very small print, way down toward the bottom, on the left side. Here, the Rashi manuscript is actually on both sides of the Talmud page, in the very tiny print. It starts on the right side where Rashi usually is, and it continues over here on the left side. Three lines from the bottom, you'll see about five words in. It says, Batlu. 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 Okay? So there, let's see what the language was. Gzerot batlu. Right? The gzerot batlu, the restrictions of the shloshim were canceled, but the days were not. So this is Rashi's comment, and Rashi just sort of fills in what I just said. Shiachol legaleach ulegahetz. The regal comes along, at which time this person is able to cut his hair, legalech, ulegahetz, and iron his clothes, which you're allowed to do in shloshim. Legahetz et begadav, iron his clothes. Aval yemei shloshim lo batlu, but the days of shloshim were not canceled. Klomar, that is to say, a dayanim tluyim, they are still hanging. The omdim, and they're there. She'im yigalach lechvoda regel, in what sense are they still there? If he will cut his hair in honor of the festival, vadai batlu legamre. Absolutely, they are finished, canceled. ended totally. Totally. V'ilav, and if this guy did not cut his hair, asur legalech achar regel, it is prohibited for him to cut his hair after the festival, ad shloshim, until a full count of shloshim has been made. Okay? Very good. Over to the next page. Oops.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes.
On Rashi from.
Yep.
Was Rashi reporting an oral tradition? In other words, are these things that he himself learned or that he is deducing?
Most cases, I assume he himself has learned them. Rashi studied at the yeshiva in Worms, okay? Which is very important because what you have in Rashi, and it's historically significant right to our own day, is that you have a continuity between the German community and the French community. Rashi was French. It wasn't so far to go to Germany. I mean, it was not like going to Italy. So he went, he studied in Germany. Soon, you know, he then goes back to Troyes, sets up his own academy there, and in all likelihood, what you see in the Rashi, to a great extent, is the German school of learning. Now, the German school of learning probably has a certain continuity to that. The picture we have of the rabbinic tradition is that it goes from the land of Israel to Rome, up the Italian peninsula, crosses the Alps, you are there. All right, you know, crosses right over there, the other side goes to Germany. You got the Rhine River. The Rhine River comes out of the Alps. So it is in the Rhineland, on the other side, the north side of the Alps, that you develop these crucial Jewish communities of Mainz and Worms. And the major centers of learning in the 10th century were there. People would come from France, Jews who lived in France, and that meant they lived in eastern France. They lived in, not on the Atlantic Ocean, but in the center to the eastern part of the country. That's where the Jewish community was. Probably it all came like this. It came up the boot, out to Germany, and then moved westward. That's where the Jewish community went. So Rashi goes over and studies in Worms. Now, in this, that's one of the historical facts that has been used to try and figure out the relation between the pseudo-Rashi in this Moed Katan and the Rashi manuscript. The pseudo-Rashi is attributed to Rabbeinu Gershom. Rabbeinu Gershom was in Worms or Mainz, one of those towns, I don't remember where. That's where he taught. He was German. Some of the Rashi here is the same, the Rabbeinu Gershom's Rashi, which is about 100, well, less than 100 years before, and the real Rashi in the manuscript are the same. Some of that is the same. Why? Probably because Rashi's reporting what he learned in the yeshiva. Okay? Now, the rest that's not the same, it's hard to know what that is. You know, with all of these things, you don't know how much is the product of his own work, how much was the result of collaboration with other people. It's really very hard to know that. But I think there is a relation to what happened before. Some of this undoubtedly is his own, his own thoughts. Because any commentator's got to make many, many decisions. And he's got way different traditions. So I think there is an oral tradition there. It's a tradition of his own learning. And some of that is set down here. Okay? Good. Okay, next page. Now the Gemara goes on and says, Va'atanya. Now, the Va'atanya, I'll give you an example of what I just said. Look here first in the Pseudo Rashi. No, so look first in the regular Rashi that's published as Rashi here. Okay, see the Hatanya that's on the top of the page, where Rashi usually is, on the inside column on the top of the page. See the first word that says Vehatanya in the Rashi?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? Vehatanya. Vehatanya normally means, but it is taught. But. The there means but. And strangely enough, this is a use of Vehatanya which is somewhat sui generis. Vehatanya here doesn't mean but. But would be an objection. We teach you one thing, and then the Gemara comes and says, Vehatanya, but don't you remember there's a Baraita that says, and you go into that kind of an argument. Here, look at the Rashi, the Sura Rashi, says, Vehatanya siyata. He makes the point that what is now going to come in the Tanya, in the Baraita that's being brought, is unusual in that it's not an objection to what was just said, but it's siyata, which means support. The help of, support of. It's supporting what was just said. So it's really, it's a help to the reader. And here you see a comment that's simply a help to the reader because the normal reader will try to interpret the words that are coming as an objection. So it's really a help. Look into the Rashi manuscript. It's also the very first comment in the Rashi manuscript on the lower left-hand side of the page. Vatanya, look what it says. It says, siyata. It's exactly the same thing. Exactly the same thing. So that's a good example. Right. Here you have two different traditions, you know, two different people wrote this. Exactly the same comment. Exactly the same comment. And it's a very useful comment for the reader because you really get thrown off by this unusual use of Vehatanya. Okay, Vehatanya. So now we know this Vehatanya, there's going to be a Baraita, which will support what we have just learned. It won't object to it, it'll support what we've just learned. Hakoveret meto shloshim yom kodem laregel. Oh, shlosha, sorry, thank you. He who buries his dead 3 days before the regel, but la imenu gzerat shiva. That's just what we read in the Mishnah, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Here we go. Shmona yamim kodem laregel. If he buries his dead 8 days before the festival, but la imenu gzerat shloshim. The shloshim is canceled. Where did we read that before? In the Mishnah. Same as in the Mishnah. So bright is so far the same as the Mishnah. Umegaleach erev haregel. Oh, that's what we just learned. And he may shave on the eve of the festival. That's to say, the 8 days. If the 8 days have passed, this guy, because if only 3 days have passed, he can't shave. Because the shaving is a 30-day issue. So 3 days will cancel Shiva, but it won't cancel the Hoshloshim, so we're not talking about that. We're talking about the 30 days. So if 8 days have passed, and the regel comes, what do we learn? It cancels, and then, Umigaleach erva regel. And he can cut his hair the eve of the festival. Im logilach erva regel. If he did not cut his hair on the eve of the festival, asor legaleach achar haregel. He is prohibited to cut his hair after the festival, meaning until the end of the 30 days of a real count. Okay, so here there's a baraita that says exactly the way it interprets what Rav and Rav Huna said. The baraita says exactly the same thing. So it's a support for that position. Abba Shaul Omer, but Abba Shaul says, Mutar legaleach achar haregel. Oh, he's objecting to this last thing that was said. Even if the guy did not cut his hair
before
the regel, Mutar legaleach achar haregel. It's okay for him to cut his hair after the regel. So as far as he's concerned, that was the second point of view, Rav Sheshit's point of view. which was, if after the 8 days the regal comes, even if the guy doesn't cut his hair, it doesn't make any difference. Because he says both the gezerot and the yamim are cut off. Remember, the first point of view was the gezerot are cut off, but the yamim are not cut off. Rosh Hashanah said the gezerot and the yamim are cut off by the regal. And this is now said by Abba Shaul. Same thing. So here is support in the Baraita for both the positions that we saw, positions which were enunciated by Amoraim, Rav Huna, their Amoraim. You have a stronger position if you can find the Baraita and you find Tanaim that said the same thing. So that's what we just see here. But now the Baraita goes on and it actually
but
gives us some
the
more...
The Baraita, isn't it in conflict with Abba Shaul and Rav Sheshet?
Abba Shaul and Rav Sheshet, which was from where?
Said that
Filu Yamin
Batlan,
Batlan.
Yeah. And doesn't the
Breiter
say you're not allowed to?
Oh, no, except for this, the position of Abba Shaul, right? This is all one Breiter.
Oh, Abba Shaul.
He's a part of the Breiter. Oh. He's a part of the Breiter. And then the Breiter is not over yet. Oh. Okay, the Breiter is still going on. Okay, Abba Shaul, Mutalik Alech Achar HaRegel. And now he has a reason for it. Shekur shem shemitzvat shlosha mevatelet gzerat shiv'a. Just as her having observed the mitzvah of mourning for 3 days before the festival allows the festival to cancel the laws of Shiva, right? Even without this guy shaving before the festival. Kach mitzvat shiv'a mevatelet gzerat shloshim. So the fact that this guy has finished the observance of his shiva cancel the restrictions of the shloshim, even without having his shaving before the festival. Now, the comment here, let's read number 4. I think number 4 is helpful. Let me just see this. Here, number 4 summarizes the whole thing. Abba Shaul argues against the Tanakama, that means the Tana, the teacher who came before him, that Shloshim is cancelled only if he took advantage of the the Tanakama says that the Shloshim is cancelled only if he took advantage of the dispensation to shave before the festival in honor of the festival as follows. Look at the reasoning here. We know that if burial took place 3 days before the festival cancels any further observance of Shiva. Okay? That we know. It is clear that in such a case, he still cannot shave. Right? He still cannot shave. Why? Since refraining from shaving is part of the observance of Shloshim. Right? So even if 3 days pass, the guy can't, and the shiva is cut off, guy still can't shave. Because shaving goes for 30 days. And the shloshim is not canceled. And since shloshim had not yet begun when the festival began, the festival canceled only shiva, not shloshim. That's what I just said. Okay? We see then that the festival cancels shiva even though this cancellation will still not allow him to enter the festival in a well-groomed condition. Get that point. I'll read that again. We see then that the festival cancels Shiva, even though this cancellation will still not allow him to enter the festival in a well-groomed condition. Right? So it's canceling the Shiva, but stuff is going on. Stuff is still continuing. Likewise, argues Abba Shaul, where burial took place far enough in advance of the festival for Shloshim to have begun, the 8th day, so that the festival cancels Shloshim, it does so even if he did not take advantage of the cancellation to groom himself for the festival. Right? Shiva, the guy didn't take advantage of cancellation, right? He couldn't, he was a mess for the festival.
But he had no option.
Doesn't matter. According to Abba Shaul, it doesn't matter. The fact is, people get along like that.
I'm not persuaded by his reasoning.
All right, so you're not persuaded. So the truth is that the Tanakhama wasn't persuaded either. Okay? But that's the two points of view. Okay? Now, Abba Shaul, let's focus on Abba Shaul. He says the festival comes, cancels Shloshim, and look at the language here of Abba Shaul. Abba Shaul Omer, Mutar Legalech Achara Regel. Right? It is permissible to cut your hair after the regel. Shekishem Shemitzvat Shlosha Mevatelet Gzerat Shiva. Just as 3 days, if you observe 3 days of Shiva, the regel will cancel the rest of the Shiva. Kach mitzvat shiva, so observing the mitzvot of Shloshim for 7 days cancels the rest, the practices of Shloshim. He says, get what he says, kach mitzvat shiva, so does the mitzvah of Shiva. In other words, 7 days, and then comes the regel, cancels it all. What did the Mishnah say? How many days? Has to be 8. We just passed by it. Just passed by it. You didn't even notice it. We were thinking about Abba Shaul, what he said, what it had to do with the previous argument among the Amoraim. But in the very statements of Abba Shaul is something that differs from what the Mishnah taught us. The Mishnah tells us that it has to be 8 days that go by. Abba Shaul says 7 days go by.
Abba Shaul Mekel. But Abba Shaul, it's the same, because the Mishnah said 1 day of Shloshim is cancelled. And Abba Shaul says, if you have the full 7 days of the Shiva, it's the same as everyone.
Let's see what the Gemara says. Maybe you're right, maybe you're wrong. That's what the Gemara says. The Gemara says, first of all, Shiva. It heard the word seven. Abba Shaul said Shiva Yamim Katuba Mishnah Shmana Yamim. Aren't you listening? Shiva Vahaanan Shmanatnan. But we already learned in the Mishnah 8 days. What is Abba Shaul coming and saying 7 days? The Mishnah said 8 days. Kasavar Abba Shaul Miktzat Hayom Kechula. This is the source now for the concept we discussed earlier. Abba Shaul has the point of view that part of a day counts for the whole day. The Yom Shvi'i Ole Lo Lechan Ulechan. And the seventh day counts for this and for that. This is the source now in the Gemara, that Miktzat Hayom Kechulo, that a part of a day counts as a whole day. And that is the point of view of Abba Shaul. Okay? Therefore, when he says 7 days, what he means is that the beginning of the seventh day leaves the rest of that day to be counted more or less like the eighth day. So for him, the seventh day, most of that day, a good part of that day, was more or less to be dealt with as the eighth day. Okay? That's the way he dealt with these things. Okay? Now, the English is good. It emerges that the sages in Abba Shaul differ on two separate issues. Whether the festival cancels Shloshim if he did not take advantage of the dispensation to shave before the festival, and B, whether part of a day counts as the whole day. The Gemara records a halachic ruling regarding this dispute. Amar Rav Chista, Amar Ravina, Bar Shila, Halacha ka Abba Shaul. Rav Chista says that the law goes according to Abba Shaul. That is the law. The law goes according to Abba Shaul, meaning, I assume, in both cases. In both cases. That is to say, that the guy, even if he doesn't cut his hair or his beard before the regel, after the regel, it's okay, he can cut it. Right? He was lenient in both ways. And Miktzat Hayom Kechulo. That 7 days is like 8 days. All right, so that's what Rav Chista says. Umodim chachamim la Abba Shaul, And the sages agree with Abba Shaul, Keshachal Shmini Shelo Liyot B'Shabbat Erev HaRegel. This we saw earlier in the Gemara. The sages agree in the one case where the eighth day is on a Shabbat and the Regel, the festival, begins Saturday night. All right? Remember that. When you have a case where the eighth day is on Shabbat, normally the sages would say you could cut your hair on the eighth day. But it's Shabbat, so you can't do it on the eighth day. Therefore, in that case, they'll take the day before, and they agree with Abba Shaul in that one case, that the part of the day is to be dealt with like a whole day. Because they, too, they realize that a person, they really would like to see you well-kempt for the holiday, and therefore, in that case, they're lenient and they go along with Abba Shaul. Okay?
Great. I think every sage must have thought that the part of the day is the full day, because take the situation where 3 days have passed since the burial and the fourth day is the regel. So everyone says you can cut your hair before the regel. But
who says that? 3 days? No way. Nobody can cut their hair.
Because then you need to keep it for the shloshim.
That's right. For cutting of the hair, it goes 30 days.
All right. So. All right. Well, is there some. What I'm trying to say is that whatever you are permitted to do to prepare for the regel, whether it's 7 days or 8 days, unless the day, if you have to observe X number of days, and then the next day, X plus one, is the regel, if that last day that you have to observe is not considered only part of a day, you would never be permitted to prepare.
The Gemara is going to say a little while on that Abba Shaul agrees that in terms of 3 days, part of the day is not like a whole day.
Because yeah,
you're right.
themselves.
No, because he says because you're right. It's right. Shiva. There's so few things that you can do during Shiva, and in fact, you're going to have to go into the regal almost like Shiva. But keep in mind, of course, that we don't agree with that. But that's the way he dealt with it. So he dealt with it just as you were suspecting there was a problem there. He had the same problem.
My question is such an emphasis on this haircutting, the whole thing is the haircutting, and there's a lot of other things involved with Shiva and Shloshim other than just shaving and haircutting. Is this just an example that means that if this is the case, everything else goes along
it's
with
an
it?
Interesting
or
question.
Are we a particularly physically conscious people when it comes to holidays and symbolism, and our physical appearance is what this is all focused towards, and it is more important or very important in regard to other things?
On this you could write a book in answer
not
to that
me.
Question.
I'm just asking you a short answer.
There's no short answer, because that's a good question. That is exactly an important question, and it's not clear from what we've read. And it won't be a lot clearer from what we will read further on. It gets a little clearer, but it's not clear whether because they're concentrating on this, it's because that's an example. And everything else, obviously, they're talking about all the other things, like wearing new clothes and ironing the clothes, and you know what, all these details, they of course mean that. Or the opposite. the reason that they're talking about this is because they mean this, and the other things are not to be dealt with the way this was, because there's something special about this. As I said, both those points of view are well articulated in the halacha. As you can imagine, what happens eventually is that the halacha usually, particularly in the laws of mourning, there's sort of a compromise position that's eventually reached, because it is clear that it is the hair that is so significant here. Remember that one reason why hair is so significant, too, is that there's a biblical source for hair. Source for the hair.
Yeah.
The biblical source. And that both complicates the issue, or I'm not sure which way it goes, we know that you could go in two different directions with this. But the hair is from the Bible. Remember, the source of the Bible was Aaron. Moses says to Aaron, Roshechem al tifrau. Roshechem al tifrau. Don't let your hair grow wild. Don't let it grow long. Which is to say, everybody else has to. So there's a real biblical source to that, which also may be the reason why they're concentrating on it, because it's, it goes back to the Bible.
My observing with Barry was Shloshim, when his mother passed away. All I can say is you take a normal-looking human being and you do not cut your hair, and he shaved, didn't cut his hair for 30 days, and there's a very fine line between the homeless and a regular person,
yeah.
Because there really is, without regular grooming, men in particular start to look very publicly disheveled very, very quickly.
That's
not
correct.
Shaving and not cutting hair with a couple of weeks is an enormous difference. It's a really public transformation.
That's correct.
So much so that people in professions are allowed to shave and do things, because it really becomes very, very obvious.
We've had this commonly in our Zara. I had as much as the last week, I had it twice. We have two of our members now, both of whom are concerned about these things, and it's a real issue in business. And so the laws are sensitive to that, as you correctly say, the laws are sensitive to it. But you can see people who are observing these laws, that they really look at.
Oh, yeah.
They really look at. And you're very aware of that. And, of course, if you don't know what's going on, they begin to look like other people that are in a very different frame of your own mind.
Yeah.
I think very differently about them.
They are talking about Megaleach. So the assumption is that they're always talking about male. What about Avila?
Mm-hmm.
What is the parallel?
Well, we saw that, I think, two times ago, that women are frequently in a special position because the ramifications of these things for women are really different. Number one, they don't look so bad if they don't cut their hair, because you can see that in rabbinic times, too, the assumption was women had longer hair than men did. I mean, I can't say exactly how long men's hair was, but from all of this you can see what Bobby is saying is obviously what they were talking about. Women are just different. Women are different in that case. And we saw that in the whole issue of the fingernails. Remember we were reading about
yeah.
the fingernails? Where the subject of women looking appealing to their husbands was reason enough to find every possible leniency that you could find. So that's the case also in these laws.
Yeah, but so that means, I don't know if I'm saying that means, but so she can continue sitting shloshim? I mean, why? You see, if this
correct.
Is...
That's correct.
I mean, if it
You're
doesn't
right.
influence the
You're
outlook...
Right. Correct.
So why...
Yes, it is true, the law is directed here at men. Definitely.
So how will we practice today for women? So what is the...
No, it's the same thing.
So it's the same. So it doesn't matter. So
it doesn't
all this...
The women... the thing is, we assume the men would want to cut their hair, among other things. Okay? And the pressure is for them to cut their hair.
Correct.
Right? And we're saying to them, you can't cut your hair. With the women, it's just not an issue, because they don't have that same want. If they wanted to, they couldn't.
Yeah, but they can continue.
Yes.
You mean that the holidays are not supposed to stop?
It doesn't matter. But our issue is to prevent people who might want to do this. If they don't want to do it, if it's socially acceptable for them not to do it, it's not an issue. We are simply dealing with a case where it is socially acceptable for them to do contrary to what we want them to do. Okay, that's what we're regulating. We're regulating that. I want to go on a little bit further here. Now, another ruling. Keman az lahadi amarav amram amarav. Like whom is the teaching of Rav Amram in the name of Rav? Avel kevan sha'amdu menachamim me'etzlo. A mourner. When, as soon as the consolers, those who come to pay a shiva call, get up from his excuse me. Avel kevan sha'amdu menachamim me'etzlo. A mourner, when the visitors get up from visiting him, mutar birachitza, is he permitted? Sorry, no, that's, they have a question mark. I would read it differently. Now, here the assumption is that they're teaching that when the people get up from paying a shiva call, mutar birchitza, that person is now allowed to wash. That person is now allowed to wash. The assumption being that the mourners are sitting and people stop visiting them not at the very end of their shiva, but before that. Before that. And come on, who is that like? Ka'aba Sha'ul. That is like Abba Shaul. Abba Shaul says that a part of a day is like the whole day. Part of a day is like the whole day. The assumption here is that people will be visited at the end of the Shiva only for part of the day. And that, therefore, is like Abba Shaul. That, therefore, is like Abba Shaul. Okay? Now, I wanted to take off from there and to show you the practical ramifications of such a law. First of all, it's interesting in terms of Shiva observance in general. I've found that the beginning of Shiva, for example, it's much easier to get a minyan toward the beginning than it is toward the end. People peter out, as is natural. People want to pay a Shiva call, and they tend to do it sooner rather than later. Partly because we're all afraid if we don't do it soon, we won't get to it. So people are motivated for good reason to do it sooner rather than later. When it gets to the end of Shiva, things go slower. Usually, not always. I'm always worried the last minyan on the last morning of Shiva. Many times that's the toughest of the mornings. Because somehow people have already come, they've already done what they should do, and then comes the last day. Then comes the last day. Our custom, by the way, when is it that you get up from Shiva?
When is what?
When do you get up from Shiva?
10 o'clock on the seventh day.
Well, early in the morning. Early in the morning, right? Now keep in mind what that is implying too. If we say Miktzata Yom Kehulo, part of a day is like a whole day, you know what that could mean?
It's the whole day, it's like a part of the day.
No, it could even mean, when does the day start?
The night before.
Yeah. You know, in theory, what this could mean is the night before. This really could mean, you know, if we only knew the language that we have, and we also know that Jewish days begin at night, Miktzata Yom Kehulo, it's not really clear to us what we're talking about. Even what Abba Shaul is saying. This is the Shulchan Aruch. I want to read to you the Shulchan Aruch's conclusion about all of this, about the end of Shiva. Kevan sha'amdu menachamim me'etzel ha'avel b'yom ha'shvi'i. That is more or less the language of the Gemara that we just read. It's turned around a little bit. Since those who have come to console have stood up, I'm translating it literally, amdu me'etzel ha'avel. They have stood up from being in the house of the mourner. Bayom ha'shvi'i, on the seventh day, mutar b'chol dvarim sh'asur b'hem toch shiv'ah. It is permissible to observe all of those things that were specifically prohibited for Shiva. which is to exclude those things that continue on for Shloshim. Okay? De Miktsat Hayom Kechulo, which is to say that part of the day is considered a whole day. Loshna Miktsat Yom Shvi'i, Loshna Miktsat Yom Shloshim. Whether we mean the seventh day or the 30th day, whichever one we're talking about as far as Shloshim goes. He goes on. Kevan she'anetzachama biyom ha-shlishim, ha-shloshim. Once the sun rises on the 30th day, batlu mimenu gzerat shloshim. The observances of Shloshim are over. That's so far I've been reading to you Rabbi Yosef Karo. And remember that the Shulchan Aruch that we read is a combination of Rabbi Yosef Karo and the Ramo, Rabbi Moshe Isserles. The Ramo, Rabbi Moshe Isserles, remember the Shulchan Aruch is the set table, and the Rama, Rabbi Moshe Isserles, put on the mappah, the tablecloth on the table. That he was the rabbi in Krakow. Did I say, hear you say before the Ramoshul? Mm-hmm. He was the rabbi in the Ramoshul. That was his shul in Krakow. And he wrote the Ashkenazi emendations to the Shulchan Aruch. So when Ashkenazi traditions are in any way different, we know that because of his comments, which follow the comments of Rabbi Yosef Karo, who was a Sephardi. It was a Sephardi. The Rama goes on and says, "Ubemidinot elu," namely, in these countries or these cities, meaning in the Ashkenazi world, in our world of Ashkenazim, "She'ein amenachamim regilim lavo biyom shvi'i," where in fact more the people who come to pay a Sheva Kol don't come on the seventh day, meaning during the daytime. Sarich lehamtin ad sha'a sh'rigilim ha-menachamim lavo b'sha'ar yamim. He says you have to wait until the time that comforters normally come on other days. Dehainu, which is to say, li'achar yitzi'ah mi-beit ha-kneset, sh'rigilim lavo ha-menachamim, when people will normally come to pay the Sheva Kol. Kach nireli, that is my opinion. Udelo kamosha regilim lahamtin sha'a alayom, and not that you have to wait a whole hour on the day. So according to the Rama, the key issue is the end of davening. Because what people would do is that they would go to pay shiva calls after the davening.
Oh.
All right, you'd go to the synagogue in the morning. On the way home from the synagogue, you would go to pay a shiva call. Because that was the custom. We wait till the time on the seventh day when people normally would go to pay a call. And that's what we mean by Miktsat Hayom Kechulo. Part of the day is the whole day. That's where we get this notion of an hour of Shiva on the last day. It's just because it really means the end of the services, according to Ashkenazi tradition. And that's what the Rama is saying. Okay, service is roughly an hour. That's really about roughly what it is. So throughout the Jewish community, the custom is that you say to people, after the hour of davening on the seventh day, that is when the Shiva is over. So if you have services in the house of Shiva, after the completion of those services, or people have actually come now to make the minyan, after the minyan, the Shiva is over. Because that is the time that other people would come.
But effectively, that means that after the services at the mourner's home in the evening of the sixth day,
no,
you already covered part of the seventh day.
Ah, but that's not. We see from what Rabbi Yosef Karo said that the seventh day means the daytime. Seventh day means the daytime. And we are dealing here with people coming home from Shacharit, not from Maariv. Okay? So the seventh day means the seventh day of the daytime, and that is 1 hour, because that's what the hour of davening is.
Good.
Questions or comments?
Should they make afternoon shiva calls, we learned from this?
Well, they might have, but we see that there was obviously this custom to go early in the morning. Interesting.
It's practical, because during the shiva, people come again in the afternoon.
I'm sure that's true.
The last day.
Correct. That's exactly right. Exactly. I think that's exactly right. Probably that's the way it was done. I mean, that's not all that it might have been, but that's when the community felt that most people would do these things.
We had a kind of a public finality to the shiva, where so it wasn't in question that people might come and you may not be there or whatever, where after the morning service they actually said, this is it, we're finished with your shiva, and people could observe it. And that was, is that added on later on?
Yeah, that's the custom of some rabbis to make a public way to acknowledge that fact.
Well, it kind of serves its purpose.
It serves the purpose,
though,
definitely.
Because it acknowledges, you know, it's over, you don't come anymore, this is it, you've finished your entire thing, and everybody knows that they're... Because I could imagine that otherwise you could have stopped and people are coming to pay shiva on the seventh day and you're not there.
Unless the community is such that everybody knows what the customs are. You know, where you're dealing with a community where there's such uniformity of custom, then probably you don't need the public announcement because it's understood. But I think in the modern world, there's very good reason to do such things. Very good reason, because we don't have that kind of community at all. That makes good sense. Very good. Ladies and gentlemen, the next 2 weeks, the class will not meet, and Bezot Hashem will...